Action!
Whoa.
Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And the Easter Bunny.
Named Kate. Welcome to Med Crimes. To be the Easter Bunny.
It's the ears.
They're not on top of your head.
It's the ears.
Okay. I'll be Peter Rabbit.
It's Saturday night.
Happy Easter tomorrow, everyone.
Woo!
I got to Kate's house, and of course, she has her Easter baskets all on the counter, like a good little mom.
That is why I'm the Easter Bunny. It's not just the ears, it's that I am on this.
Kate normally says like how I usually have my shit together, and you're like so far behind. Well, I have to go home and play the Easter Bunny. I'm gonna be up all night.
It's gonna be fine.
It's not that I like outdo myself, it's just it's already 8 o'clock, so
exactly,
you know, all night to me is 10 o'clock.
We're doing a nighttime record.
It's another Saturday night late night. So it's officially for you guys April, but for us, we're wrapping up the end of March.
Yes.
And we have had a hell of a ride this month.
I'm so ready for like this sort of gross end of winter situation to be
over. I mean, I was talking about my podcast, but you're talking about the weather, so that's fine.
Story of our lives, completely different pages. Completely different, like, environments.
Listen,
that we're in.
I'm used to the hell of a ride of New England.
It's really
like, I'm over that.
I'm not. I never will be.
Just keep your boots in your car at all times.
Born and raised here, and I will still complain every year about my readiness for the next season.
I was mostly just thinking, man, we've had just a month of just sore.
And oh, yeah,
you guys that support us continue to blow us out of the water.
We literally do. Every time I look at like our metrics and our data, I'm like, how is this real?
As I told my employees this week in staff meetings that I am in awe of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I work with some amazing, wonderful people. I am in awe of you.
Mm-hmm. Samesies. We love you guys.
You have my heart.
You literally do. All of you guys.
Yeah. So we should welcome our new people.
100%.
To the crew.
Yes.
We have Martha Swanson.
Yeah, Martha. Okay.
Similar to Swanson chicken pot pies.
I mean, I love a chicken pot pie.
Just saying.
Yes.
That might have been what I had
and
for
Martha
lunch yesterday.
Stewart.
Whoa.
Okay.
This is blowing my mind.
Yes.
Anyway, I was just thinking of my pot pie yesterday for lunch.
My pot pie.
Anywho, and Christina Akers.
Yeah, Christina.
Welcome, ladies.
Yeah,
we have
buddy.
Two more to join us as well.
We have Ronnie Desiree.
Ooh.
Hey, hey, hey. And Jordan Den Hartog. Welcome.
Welcome to the family, everyone.
Woo!
Kate has an exciting mythical creature for you guys, which I started to just read that blurb on that. And I mean, this is some serious shit.
So it's serious, but also amazing. So this is Nurikabe. And I hope I'm saying that right. I think I'm saying that right because I did look it up. So Nurikabe are of Japanese mythology and they are mischievous spirits who will fuck with you, but they will not physically hurt you.
How do they fuck with you?
So they target like travelers or like weary wanderers, and they just will try and disorient them by just like turning them around.
Like when you have a blindfold for pin the tail on the donkey.
Kind of, but also like one thing that it says specifically that they do is that they'll be like, oh, like here's a traveler going down this path. Like you want to go over there? Boom, here's a fucking wall. And they just drop a wall. So I'm sorry, but I read that and I was like,
you are wall droppers.
Walk in, fuck shit up, walk out. I love this.
See ya.
So
drop
welcome.
The mic.
The four of you guys are Nurikabe.
You're never gonna forget that one.
I'm loving it so much. Devin's taking us on a fucking ride with Dr. Shipman here.
You know,
and I'm so ready for the rest of this info.
I gave you a little teaser last week. Short and sweet little snippet.
I'm so ready.
Can you say
rest.
That three times fast? Short, sweet little snippet.
I can't.
But anyway.
Not even going to try. It's 8
quick
p.m.
summary. Dr. Harold Shipman is one of the... Oh. Short, sweet little snippet
Shipman.
Of Shipman.
It is 8 p.m.
Listen, I hope by now most of our followers
Saturday,
are like used to these shenanigans.
Before Easter Sunday. I hope you're all used to the shenanigans.
little summary of Harold Shipman. I have like this guy ingrained in my brain right now because it's just, man,
he's the worst human.
So he's known as one of the most prolific serial killers of all time.
And he may very well be like the most prolific, right?
Absolutely. The original Dr. Death.
Yeah, the OG.
OG.
Also, anyway. Do you guys like my Christmas mug? Happy Easter.
I'm rubbing off on you. So he practiced for several decades, 2.5 decades. His mother died when he was very young. And so that's kind of tends to like people later on. Again, brief summary. People later on tend to think that maybe his mother's death is what led him to becoming a serial killer, that he was addicted to killing. We'll kind of notice a pattern of his patients that they all, you know, are again women. And he was only 17 when his mother died. So who knows how that affects you, right? And so we kind of talked about in part one, just a lot of the theories and suspicions that were surrounding coming out, you know, that his patients were dying in clusters. He was having 10 times more deaths than any of the physicians. A poor little taxi driver who was like red with guilt because he thinks for years he drove these patients for years and then they were just dying and he was driving them to where they were going to go to die.
And he didn't know it and he had no idea.
Could
I have done something to stop this?
Correct.
But like at the time, what could he have done?
Correct. So,
so sad.
Brief little summary. In this part, in part two, we're going to talk about the murder that got him caught, because that was really like he killed all of his people pretty much the same way. We're going to get into some of his victims, but we're going to talk about how the dude got caught, what happened, the investigation, and what came after that.
I'm so ready for this.
So ready. Are you ready for this?
Burner.
In part one, we talked about that he became a physician in 1970.
Yes.
He was a junior doctor at a practice for the first few years before going out on his own.
Mm-hmm.
But it is suspected that he killed his first victim within a few months of obtaining his license.
Mm-hmm.
In March of 1971, it's suspected that he might have killed his first victim. Margaret Thompson was a 67-year-old woman, and she had died while recovering from a stroke. And she was in the care of Dr. Shipman. The deaths prior to 1975 were really hard to prove.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, I guess that makes sense.
And many of his deaths of his victims, as we'll get to later when we talk about the gross number, it's nearly impossible.
Hmm.
He was charged with not even a fraction of how many he was suspected to have killing.
Wow.
Which we'll get there. So this first suspected, not, we'll say the first alleged victim, because he was not charged with her death, was mm-hmm. in 1971. He was not caught until 1998. So this is 27 years. And we talked about in part one how, you know, there was a few small investigations, like one or two.
Like internal
stuff. Yeah, nothing really came out of anything. There was a lot of, that just kind of came out with some of those suspicions and the hearsay. But in 1998, so after potentially doing this for almost 30 years, he finally met his match. And it's said that maybe his arrogance really caught him, that being caught was to be inevitable because of what happened in this case. So he had used a lethal dose of morphine to murder a what was seemingly healthy 81-year-old woman.
Okay.
Her name was Kathleen Grundy. And this was his last victim.
Oh,
we believe we know who his first was, but she is definitely his last.
And there were a bunch in between.
So many that I'll tell you the gross number after. Okay. Oh, so it's reported that this is the case where Shipman went after the money, and it was his greed and arrogance that was his undoing.
Okay.
So he had been doing this for so long that it was just like, what else can I get out of it? You know, kind of like when you're on a high from drugs, not that I know this from experience, but you need more and more and more to keep that going.
Yeah.
So this time he's like, well, I'm going to try and get some cash out of it.
So prior to this, he had not, there was no monetary gain at all for him.
There's some suspicion that I'll get to in the end that he might have taken some items from, from some of his victims, but he never did anything with it.
Oh,
so this was all just purely an addiction
literally
to killing.
Just murdering people for no
Unlike
reason
the
other
funeral
than
home where they were doing these things and raking in the cash
money.
And not doing anything. He was getting nothing.
Okay, so he was just literally a psycho.
So Kathleen Grundy, she was the former mayor of Hyde, which is where his surgery was.
Okay.
So he decides to kill the former mayor. Hello. Ugh. So she was the former mayor and she was a wealthy woman.
Okay.
She died suddenly on June 24th, 1998, in her room at home. Angela Woodruff, excuse me, was her daughter, and her daughter was shocked.
Yeah.
Yes, her mother is 81. Very likely could be natural causes at that time of life.
Yeah.
But up until, you know, days prior, her mother was completely healthy.
Right.
And then now she's gone.
So if she's gone, like either some big sudden event happened.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Shipman was able to convince the daughter to not do an autopsy. He's just like, no, you know, I've been kind of treating her off and on for, you know, some cardiac things. And I think it was just an event. And I think per your mother's wishes, I think it's best that we just bury her.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So days go on, you know, services go through. She gets buried. No autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you know,
heartbroken, but
sorry to Angela that your poor mother, Kathleen, she's died. But here we go.
How awful.
However, Angela soon went to the police days after the services when she finds her mother's will.
Oh.
So she soon went to the police when she found that her mother's entire fortune, it was worth hundreds of thousands of British pounds. I don't even know the correlation between pounds and dollars. I don't. Maybe I should have looked that up. But all of it was willed to Dr. Shipman. The entire fortune. Not just a fraction. The whole entire thing.
Okay.
Now.
The fuck?
Her daughter, Angela, is an attorney.
Oh, shit. She fucked with the wrong shit.
Hold up.
Yeah,
I've always handled my mother's affairs.
Yep.
I've always taken care of everything, made sure everything was airtight. There's no way. She's like this.
So immediately, no. Immediately, something fishy is going on here because my mother would
She's not only just the next of kin, she's also her attorney.
She's her legal counsel. Yes. So why? Yep. Yeah. Okay.
So she's like, hold up.
What a fucking moron.
So, what happened was, so obviously it came to surprise to her that there was a second will, that it existed, that it was more recent than the last one, and it left the entire estate to Shipman. She's Jesus. Like, no. So she knew. She's like, this is definitely a forgery. She's like, there's no, absolute no way. So then she's like, of course, it raises the suspicion. My mother died suddenly.
Yeah.
This is a forged document that I had never seen before, or at the time. She was believing it to be forged.
Mm-hmm.
So she calls the police.
Yep.
So Superintendent Bernard Postles quickly came to the conclusion upon examination of the evidence. Just right there. You know, of course you have to build the case, but initially he's like, yep, something's not right. You know? So he sees that the daughter's got this. The mother dies suddenly. Get this. I haven't gotten there yet. And maybe I'll mention it, but I'll just say it now. This will was dated 2 days prior to her death.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Arrogance?
This man.
This is where the arrogance failed you, Dr. Shipman.
I was just going to say, either he is so blinded by just sheer arrogance that it does not occur to this well-educated man that flags would be raised if you are going to have a will that's dated 2 days before your death, and all of a sudden, like, this woman is just going to leave her entire estate to her primary care physician, who she just has like a normal physician relationship for. He didn't realize that people would fucking question this.
He hadn't been caught in almost 30 years at this point. So one of the things, so what's interesting, you know, so the whole thing is starting to stem to be a movie. Like, it's just something like something that you're just watching on a movie.
This is not real life.
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah,
The other things that happens is, so one of the other lead detectives, his name is Stan Egerton. He's about to retire. The poor guy is about to retire.
Shit just rolls across his desk.
He's been on the job. He's been on the job for 30 years. He's getting ready. He's in his last like few weeks to month of retirement.
Jesus H. Christ.
And this comes across his desk and it's just like,
well, shit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So initially, you know, it's like, okay, I have to deal with a potential murder and all this stuff. But they obviously don't know like
the scale.
They don't know the scale of it. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So it's like picture watching a movie backwards, right? And all of a sudden you know what happens and then you just keep unfolding all the way to the very beginning.
And then you just find out more and more and more. And it's like, what?
And the narrative would be a serial killer grown so overconfident in his ability to avoid detection finally puts a foot wrong and seals his own fate. So his attempt at forging the will was described by the detectives as so badly handled that it was inevitable he would be caught.
Bro. Really?
Yep. The police found the will had been produced on an aging typewriter in Shipman's surgery and that his fingerprints were on the document. So, of course, you know, so the daughter is an attorney. She's like, no fucking way this will is real. Mm-hmm. I'm going to report it to the police. It's dated 2 days prior to when her mother dies. And they come to find out when they're going into his surgery, his quote unquote office, that there's an aging typewriter over there that just so happens to match the stuff, the ink on the paper, and his fingerprints are all over it.
So obviously he just like fucking typed this shit up and was like, this is passable. This is fine.
Checkmate.
Unbelievable.
So as we've talked about in other podcasts, Grundy's body was exhumed.
Okay.
So, you know, they have suspicion, right? But they don't have proof.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to build a case. Mm-hmm. We've talked about in past how hard it is to get a body exhumed.
Oh, yeah. It's not easy.
So they exhumed her body and did a postmortem, and that revealed that she had died of a morphine overdose.
Boom sauce.
And they could tell that it was administered within 3 hours of her death.
Oh, wow.
Which was precisely the time frame that he did his home visit to her. Because again, like I said in part one, many of his victims were found in their own home, mm-hmm. in odd positions,
like posed,
sitting in a
staged.
Chair, fully clothed, yes. not passing in bed.
Yes.
You know, so this was her.
Wow. Okay.
So he's obviously prime suspect.
Yeah.
Hello. Yep. All lines
the
are pointing
one
to Shipman.
Suspect. Yeah.
They raid his home. And they yielded a bunch of medical records, an odd collection of jewelry, an old typewriter, which proved to be the instrument. And then in the statement by Paul Spencer, he stated, Paul Spencer was a gentleman who worked in the surgery.
Okay.
He was like an assistant.
Uh-huh.
So Paul Spencer states, he's like, his signature, Paul Spencer's, is on the will as the witness.
Oh.
And so Paul Spencer states that he was asked to sign the document 2 days before Kathleen's death, and he stated how it was handed to him that the document was folded over. It was like folded in half already with just here's the line, please sign here. And he told him that it was a paperwork for Kathleen, that Kathleen had signed an agreement to participate in a survey or a trial. And so it just needed to have a witness signature.
But he did not witness jack
and
shit.
And Paul, fairly new,
yeah.
was also just like, you
I'm
know.
I'm going to do what this guy tells me. This is his
correct.
Business,
he's
his
like,
practice.
He's like, here we are in his own office, his yep. own business. He's the lead. Who am I to say?
I'm going to do what I can to
okay,
help.
Okay, Doc.
Yep.
Here's my signature.
Wow.
Sorry, Paul.
Sorry, Paul. Womp womp. Just read what you sign, folks.
Please. Obviously, again. Immediately apparent to the police that there was just like no question
no.
in Shipman. And then when they it was apparent to them, and then from all the medical records that they got, that all of a sudden they're like, this goes past more than one death. Looking at, they had piles and piles of medical records of scores of other patients.
Right. So
that were just
sitting
in his house.
If he did this to one person, they probably were like, well,
yep.
Let's look at this mortality rate, right? Like this, his mortality rate
being
so fucking high.
Which had already been looked into before.
Right. So like, maybe there's something to that.
So now they're like, okay, so now we're starting to think that there's more than one single death here. So they start giving priority to the deaths that they that would be the most productive to investigate.
Mm.
They're like, let's just start looking at some of these that we could get.
You could actually get details hard evidence. From. Yep.
And most of them were ones that were not cremated, you know, so they're right. like, okay, so let's look at some of these other bodies that yes. were more recently died.
Okay.
And so they were looking at victims who had not been cremated and who had died following a home visit by shipmen.
Mm.
Those were given the top priority. I have a few names of the of some of the victims here. Joan Malia, 73. She died in June of 1998. Winifred Meller, 73, who died in May of 1998. Bianca Pomfrey, 49, who died in December of 1997. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them within 6 months.
Oh, wow.
5 of them within 6 months. So and not including Kathleen. So 6. They started looking into them and they had they exhumed all of those bodies. They exhumed a total of 12 bodies.
Wow.
Initially for the investigation.
What a huge undertaking for them, too.
I mean, one exhumation takes months.
Yeah.
Weeks to months to be able to get.
And this was like, you know, years ago.
This is in the 90s.
Yeah. But it was the 90s.
30 years ago. That's scary. So in October of 1998, Shipman was subsequently charged with all of those murders. Those 6 murders of the women that I just mentioned.
Okay, so the, I'm assuming so he, they exhumed so, and they found yes. that they had been.
So they have enough connection that they've started them there. In total, he was only charged with murders for 15 women.
Okay.
And again, we'll go further into how much more. But he was charged with the murders of 15 women and also charged with the forgery of Kathleen's will. During this time, it was also come out that when they were looking at all of the deaths and going trying to figure out how grossly huge this was.
Right.
They came to the realization that Shipman urged a lot of their families to cremate their relatives in an overabundant number. I mean, cremation is very big now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how big it was in the 90s in the UK. I don't know. But it was an overwhelming number, much higher than a lot of other physicians.
Oh, okay.
And then this was, and you know, and obviously they're like, well, this was probably in an effort to try to get rid of evidence.
100%. Yeah.
Like the more patients I can cremate, the less chance that they would exactly. ever convict me.
Right.
So his numbers for the cremations were so much higher. A lot of the families would also sometimes give a lot of pushback.
Oh yeah.
You know, and they would ask a lot of questions, especially to like, how did this happen? I mean, one of the women that I just mentioned was in her 40s. You know, Kathleen right. Grundy was 81, but one of them was in her 40s, oh, which was God, the same age so that sad. His mother died. But she Jesus. Had terminal. She had terminal, she had terminal cancer.
Sure.
So a lot of times the families were just like, how did this happen? Like, what's going on? And they would push for questions, and then he would just give them computerized medical notes that would corroborate a cause of death as being something that was natural, something right. that he was treating or.
Yeah.
But again. 47-year-old in the family to not know that she had medical comorbidities or whatnot, but
yeah, and it's just interesting that they didn't push for an autopsy mm-hmm. when someone dies at that age, and it's so sudden and unexpected.
Yep.
But I mean, also this guy to have gotten away with it for so long has to be so manipulative.
And remember, he had thousands of patients, and he got such a reputation in the community,
yeah.
that they trusted him immensely.
Sure, of course, you that know makes
he
sense.
Was the doctor to go to in the right. community.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, and everybody at that point trusted doctors.
Yeah.
We wonder why they don't now.
Yeah, I know. Too much of this bullshit going on.
So the reveal of all of these crimes, obviously, is everything's coming out in the media and whatnot. Everybody is just like. Outraged.
Yep.
It's just like, what has been going on? Like, not Dr. Shipman. Are mm-hmm. you kidding me? Or you have other people on the other end, like the taxi driver going, oh my God, I knew it,
mm-hmm.
you know, but yes. never came forward.
Yes.
I
can't imagine too, like you said, the guilt, that poor guy,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And then a lot of people. And so then at that point, then it came out about the 2 internal investigations.
Okay.
So now that he's been charged with murders, this big story is coming out of how many women he killed. And so that, but then they're like, then they find out, wait a minute, you guys looked into him however many years prior
and didn't find anything?
Like, what?
You really?
How did you?
Yeah.
Everybody was livid.
Wow. Not,
like, the whole area was in an uproar.
Yeah, of course.
You know.
He is the guy, like you said. He is mm-hmm. the guy for everyone yes. in the community.
And then that's when they find out, you know, he murdered however many people in a month. 6 women that lived on the same street. You know, it's just like everybody, nobody felt safe, right? Like,
yeah, of course.
Wow. And so then when the news came out about the previous investigations, there was even more suspicion now that was raised because the initial investigations didn't show anything.
Mm-hmm.
So then they were able to be like, how many of these medical records were forged?
Right.
And so now it again brought even more to the investigation.
Ugh.
Like, it just kept going layers and layers, like an onion.
This is it's thousands like of patients, and like one patient has an immense medical record. I mean, yes. they're probably more robust now than they were back in this day.
Mm-hmm.
But just think about the amount of fucking man hours that had to get put into the volume of shit that had to get gone through.
Stan Egerton was going to retire.
Poor Stan.
The poor guy.
Poor one out for Stan.
He went out with a doozy.
Jesus H. Christ. Poor Stan.
So in October 5th of 1999, so about a little over a year later, is when he goes to trial.
Whoa.
There were multiple attempts by his defense. They wanted to have Shipman tried in 3 separate phases. They wanted to start with cases with physical evidence, cases that didn't have any physical evidence, and then the Grundy case. They wanted that to be completely separate. Yes, especially because they had the forgery. Like, yep. It made it a whole separate thing.
Yes.
But they also had attempts to also have any of the damning evidence related to his fraudulence and the accumulation of how he got the morphine and the drugs. They were all thrown out.
Wow.
Judge was like, nope, see ya.
Hmm.
And so he proceeded with the trial on 16 charges, 15 murders and 1 forgery.
And then 1 forgery. Oh, yep. Wow.
The prosecution asserted that Shipman had killed the 15 patients because he enjoyed exercising control over life and death.
Well, that's what is baffling. You know, and I say that when, you know, we've done so many cases like this where someone just likes to kill for the sake of killing mm-hmm. people and playing God.
Just for the pleasure of it. They're getting nothing out of it but pleasure.
But it's just like, why? It's just, I don't know. I guess I can't wrap my head around why anybody would harm another human being just for the sake of harming another human being. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
So sad.
Agreed. And so the prosecution was able to state that he enjoyed it by controlling life and death. And then they dismissed any claims that the defense might have tried to have by saying that he was acting compassionately by trying to give them a peaceful passing because none of the victims were suffering a terminal illness.
Right. Like the 47 year old. They were trying to
play off of his mother's death that he saw.
Fucking break.
They were basically giving the stories that, you know, he saw what the drugs did for his mother and to give her a peaceful passing in her time of need.
Nope.
And so he was trying to do the same thing for
mm-hmm.
them. Hello, though, my favorite girl in this whole story, Angela Woodruff, the lawyer.
Yeah.
The lawyer Dada.
Is she kicking some ass?
So she's the very first witness.
Yep.
She's the very first one that they call.
Put me in, coach.
I'm ready to play.
Fucking put me in.
So her forthright manner and her account of being able, her determination to get the truth out just impressed the jury. She was able to, again, she's an attorney herself, so she's a badass bitch.
Yeah.
And so she's just able to state facts so easily and accounts of when she last saw her mother, the last time that these documents were done correctly, and all of those things.
This woman not allowing the whole "you fucking killed my mom and I know you killed my mom" shit cloud her ability to be a bad ass.
She was just like, she used her rage in a way to be like, you're going down, man.
Doing the Lord's work.
Yeah. Wow. So she was the first witness. It stayed with the jury the entire time.
Like, I stand her.
Just like, nope.
I stand me and Angela.
And I mean, the trial went on for a very long time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think it went on for
so
months.
So much. Oh, wow.
It went on for months.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yep.
Good old Angela. She's my
Angela.
Favorite.
We love Angela.
The government, so the next to proceed was also the government pathologist.
Mm.
And so he brought the court through all of the postmortem findings. Mm-hmm. And again, these weren't your traditional autopsies. These people had already been buried.
Sure.
You know, so it was just like everything was pretty gruesome.
Wow.
The detail. And he went over the morphine toxicity, what it does to the body, and how it was the cause of death in all of the circumstances.
Oh, wow.
And then they also had the fingerprint analysis of the forged will. And it actually showed that Grundy, that Kathleen had never actually even touched the will. His fingerprints were all over it. Hers were not.
This guy, he did not think this through.
Nope.
No, he just thought, this is one little bit and tidbit. No one's ever going to look into this because I am who I am. And they're going to see this and say, it's totally plausible that this elderly woman left everything to me.
2 days before she died.
Totally plausible.
It's a coincidence.
Zero red flags anywhere on this. This checks out.
So this witness was able to do the fingerprint analysis that she never touched the will. And also they had a handwriting expert that was able to show that it was a crude forgery.
Okay.
So the prosecution is just like, we got Angela, check. We got the postmortem, check.
They have all
Here's
this
the handwriting,
stuff.
Check. The fingerprints.
Chickity check. This guy.
And then they He's also the had a police computer analyst. He testified how Shipman had altered his computer records that would create symptoms that his dead patients never actually had.
Okay.
And most of these were created by a computer timestamp. They were created within hours of their death.
Wow. Okay. So they could say, hey, this guy, like, was planning on killing this person, and
premeditation.
I'm gonna add fucking, you know, coronary artery disease and COPD to their mm-hmm. diagnosis list so that everyone knows they had comorbidities, and yes. that it's totally plausible that they could have yep. a sudden cardiopulmonary event. Apps. This fucking guy. Oh my God.
Hours before they died.
Wow.
He just happened to update all of their medical records. Hours within him going to their house to do the last visit. They also, so not only did they have that all in relation to, you know, Kathleen's death and whatnot, it progressed onto other victims and the accounts of what their relatives had to say. And then it just kept showing this pattern of his behavior. All of the stories were so similar, one after another. Lack of compassion, disregard for the wishes of the relatives, and the reluctance to attempt to revive the patients. It's also said that there was another area of his fraudulence. So, this part killed me.
Uh-oh.
He would pretend to call emergency. So if the families like were there at the time, he would pretend to call emergency services in the presence of the relatives.
No, he would not pretend.
He would cancel the call when the patient was discovered to be dead. So he would start the call, be like, yep, I'm calling right now. Oh my God, they've died. There's nothing that we can do. Cancel the call. But the telephone records show that no phone calls were ever made. So he's just doing it up on the good old not cell phone, probably the dial up back then. And no phone calls were ever made. So he's putting it now. So then with the families, he's putting on a big old act at the time of death for those people that had families present. So not all of them died alone. Some of them are there at the house when Shipman is visiting them. And he's still ballsy enough to go do it.
Wow. This fucking. I don't think I've said it enough, but this fucking guy is the theme of this episode. This fucking guy.
We'll title it This Fucking Guy Part
Subtitle,
2.
Subtitle, This Fucking Guy Part 2. Oh my God. I cannot even believe the fucking showmanship and the theatrics.
Yeah.
Oh, these poor families.
He sucks.
Oh my God, this guy.
Prosecution's killing it. I mean, they're just like, check,
them up,
check, check.
Slice and dice.
So lastly, they bring out evidence of his drug hoarding. So this was now introduced into the trial. False prescribing to patients who didn't require morphine. Over-prescribing to those who did. And there was also proof of his visits to the homes of the recently deceased to collect up unused drug supplies for disposal.
Oh, so
he would then go to the house and take all the meds, like, saying that he needed
leftover.
Saying, here, I need to collect the medication. We have to properly dispose of it, blah, blah, blah. You just go fucking reuse it on somebody else.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Or himself. Is he using still? Was there like any...
Not that we can find.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
He had done his stint and whatnot. Not right. that I could...
I was just wondering with the overprescribing and stuff, was this...
I think this was more, again, the overprescribing was for some people who needed it.
Okay.
Like there was legit like people mm-hmm. that he would need to give the morphine to and whatnot. And he overprescribed so that he could give it and then give it to people who didn't need it. Some roundabout way. Laws that the DEA probably didn't have back then that they now do.
Yeah.
So throughout this whole thing, we just talked about, you know, five or six different ways the prosecution's killing it.
Mm-hmm.
Check the boxes, you know, and the entire time Shipman's demeanor did nothing to assist his defense.
Okay.
You know, they tried to take the defense tried to paint a picture that he was a dedicated healthcare worker, you know, and that he was having compassion for these people and whatnot. But despite all those attempts, he was completely arrogant. He was constantly changing his stories. And he was being caught in obvious lies. So none of this was able to just help corroborate any kind of case for them.
Textbook
and the jury,
narcissist, gaslighting. Yeah,
they had no sympathy for him. They're just like, no, we're done with you.
Bye.
So it was a very, so after all of that, the judge gave a very meticulous summary of everything that had happened. And that he did say to the jury, he goes, so we've gone over all of this in detail. But I do want to caution you that no one had actually witnessed Shipman kill anybody. There was never a witness.
Sure.
So
even with these people that had families that were there.
But there was no like witness of him injecting. You know what I mean? Like there was
right.
no witness of him.
No one ever
giving.
Actually saw
Correct.
Him. Okay.
Remember when we had that whole, what was it? Janine Jones? You had to have that witness of
yes.
the syringe and whatnot.
Yes, absolutely.
So the judge is just saying, we've got all of this evidence. But just remember, nobody saw it.
Right.
So just proceed diligently. They didn't fucking care. They're like, well, the jury was sufficiently convinced by the testimony and evidence presented and unanimously found Shipman guilty of all charges.
I'm appropriately convinced.
15 counts of murder and one of forgery on the afternoon of January 31st of 2000. It started in October. So this is the months that it went
wow.
on for.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
Yep. So with that,
wow.
guilty times 15.
Good.
Plus guilty for forgery. He was sentenced by the judge 15 life sentences, as well as a 4-year sentence, because we got to get that in for the forgery.
Add that 4 years on there.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this effectively removed any possibility of parole.
Woo.
He was incarcerated at Durham Prison.
Mm-hmm.
And 11 days after his conviction, he was struck out of the General Medical Council in the UK.
Oh.
Struck out. Do not exist.
I'm surprised. I guess they were waiting for a conviction. I was going to say, I'm surprised they didn't do that. Just like do that.
Innocent until proven guilty.
I get it. I get it. Yeah.
It happened on February 11th. I mean, that's a good day to make things happen.
That's a great day. So. Happy birthday, Devin. Rare.
Anywho. So, of course, that's just the summation of the legal proceedings.
Right.
Then there's all these internal audits.
Oh, wow.
Like by the police, too. Like, how
yeah.
did we miss this? We looked into the guy twice.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, and then you have people from media and whatnot that are all looking into him.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to just all of a sudden, that was what was called the Shipman effect.
Okay.
And it was just like, now everybody's into it. They're all getting into their own research, looking up data and all that stuff.
And I'm sure there's like patients that are coming forward that have like, stories. I
yes.
mean, this doesn't happen and then like nobody ever sees or senses anything that's weird. Like
Correct.
Someone is going to be out there and be like, well, you know, there was that one weird, really weird interaction with him that I had that didn't
yeah.
make any sense. And now it makes a lot of sense.
Correct. So there was clinical research and investigations that continued well after the conviction. They were looking into the number and the patterns in his practice,
mm-hmm.
and then they compared them to those with the other practitioners, because that's what initially got them alarmed
right,
to him
right.
prior.
Yeah.
So now they're like even doing it more diligently. There was they were looking at clusters at certain times of the day. They were looking at when Shipman was in attendance and how it was so high the number of times he was in attendance at someone's death.
Oh,
it was so disproportionately high that it was like astounding.
Interesting.
The research estimated that he may have been responsible for the deaths of at least 236 patients over 24 year period, excuse me.
236 people.
And each one had, you know, each one, another one says 250, like each one came up with their own, you know, conclusion. Yep. Mm-hmm. They could only prove the 15 and charged him with the 15.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
That they had, that they felt they had enough for a conviction.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Again, even more continued research and audits speculated that he might have been addicted to killing. Mm-hmm. And was critical of police. And these audits were also critical of the police investigations, claiming that maybe there was a lack of experience on the investigating officers, which resulted in the missed opportunities from the years prior when they investigated him.
Well, this wasn't, I mean, this wasn't like a huge town.
No, it was very small.
This was very small. Correct. Like something like this. I mean, I don't think anybody could really adequately prepare for something like this.
Correct.
And like you take a small town and it's like the scale, the volume. How do you do that perfectly right? I don't think you do.
Yep. There was a 2000 page report that was called Death Disguised.
Oh.
And it looked at 888 cases in total of Shipman's deaths.
Mm-hmm.
He was found not responsible for 604.
Okay.
So kudos to him.
Hey.
You didn't kill those 604.
Cheers, dickwad.
They couldn't reach a conclusion in 38 of the cases.
Okay.
But again, over 200 of them, the inquiry determined were killed by shipmen.
Wow.
Most of them were women and approximately only 44 men.
Oh, okay.
Most of them were women.
Wow.
Again, there's a lot of other stories, too, that try to link it to his mother.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And to her death that was earlier on in his life.
Wow.
You know, everybody always tries to surmise what are they, if they can figure out his MO and like what led him into the motive,
right,
to having the motive,
yeah,
and all that. And someone writes here, the short answer, I think, is no. Only he could answer that question. And at the moment, it seems very unlikely that he will. Even years after his conviction, Shipman would proclaim his innocence and refuse to submit to psychiatric examination.
Oh, wow. I was going to ask, does this guy ever talk about anything? Just like a textbook narcissist, too, just to never just put things to rest and never like put themselves on the line enough to admit and just to give these families just a little bit of closure.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep.
And he would never dream of doing that because that would mean implicating himself and belittling himself. And like, he won't do it.
To the next part. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I want to say to no fault of her own, but his wife, Primrose, who again was only 17 when she married him,
mm-hmm,
stood by his side the entire time.
Okay.
She maintained that he was not guilty even after the conviction.
Wow. I'm disappointed, Primrose.
You know, so again, whatever the exact number, the sheer scale of his murderous activities meant that Shipman was catapulted from British patient killer to the most prolific known serial killer in the world.
Right.
He remained at Durham Prison throughout all of the investigations, maintaining his innocence, and he was continuously sternly defended by his wife, Primrose, and his family.
Hmm.
They moved him in June of 2003 to Wakefield Prison, and this actually made his family visits easier, and they would visit him all the time, proclaiming his innocence.
Yeah.
And so he was in prison for about 4 years, just under.
Mm-hmm.
January 13th, 2004, Shipman was discovered hung in his prison cell at Wakefield.
Oh.
Having had used a bedsheet tied to the window bars of his cell and hung himself. There's a theory that he timed his suicide.
Oh.
That he had to just do one last thing.
Hmm.
In his mind, a good thing for his wife. He had a pension payout, which I'm surprised wasn't frozen or taken away or something with this.
Yeah.
But he had a pension payout. And the records demonstrate that Shipman had been having suicidal thoughts for some time and that his main preoccupation was securing the pension for his wife. Apparently, by dying before the age of 60, he'd be eligible to receive a lump sum of £100,000, followed by £10,000 a year thereafter.
Okay.
But if he lived longer than that, there would only be a fraction of that for his pension.
Oh.
So he timed it to pass before he turned 60.
Got it. Okay. Well.
And as I've said before, Primrose Shipman stood by her husband until the very end. She kept the till death do us part. And she really kind of came into the media after.
Oh.
When talking about, remember the jewelry that yes. I had mentioned, like that was seized and stuff?
Yes.
You know, he never did anything with it. He never like sold these things. It was more just like.
Like a trophy or a memento. Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So around 70 items were seized by the police from the mass murderer's home in 1998. Relatives of the victims believe some of the jewelry may have belonged to their loved ones. It was approximately valued at about 10,000 pounds of necklaces, rings, and brooches. And Primrose was like, I demand these back. These are mine.
What?
I demand these be returned.
Are you sure they're yours, yeah. though, honey? Really?
Give me back my jewelry.
Primrose. No, ma'am.
So the police.
Ugh. Gross, Primrose.
They appealed for the relatives of the doctor's victims to contact them if they believed any jewelry had gone missing. And it said, through our inquiries, we have established that some of the jewelry received from the shipment's home did match some of the items described by the relatives of the victims. But just Primrose till his death. He was innocent. Those are mine. Ew.
This fucking guy and his fucking wife.
And, you know, in just trying to bring some closure to the loved ones, a company that was an asset recovery agency, they took ownership of all of the items. They're mm-hmm. going to continue the work and hopefully use the powers of the high court to reunite the relatives with property that may belong to their loved ones and bring resolution to the situation.
Good. Good, good, good.
Sorry, Primrose.
Womp, womp.
You get the pension, not the jewels.
The womps.
The last thing that I wanted to bring up was that, again, among many of there were so many different investigations thereafter. The General Medical Council charged six doctors that had signed cremation forms for Shipman's victims with misconduct.
Oh.
Claiming that they should have noticed the pattern between Shipman's home visits and his patient's death. Interestingly, though, all of them were found not guilty.
Yeah.
I think the General Medical Council, because of how bad this was, they wanted to try and the outrage from the public.
Yeah, they just wanted to assign more blame.
Yeah. But in court, they were all found not guilty.
I feel like when you're a provider, you're very preoccupied with your own shit. You mm-hmm. don't necessarily mm-hmm. track the data right. on your partners. Like, no one has the fucking bandwidth for
and
that.
And of course, when you're auditing something, it's very easy to find a pattern.
Yeah. Right?
But when you're in day in and day out and not everything comes to you that you know that way.
You're doing the actual doctor thing and worrying about your patients and trying to fix them and not murder them.
Yep.
It's a lot.
I think they were kind of then going on a witch hunt.
Yes.
Because in October of 2005, there was a similar hearing that was held against two doctors who worked at the Tameside General Hospital in 94. And they failed to detect that Shipman had deliberately administered a grossly excessive dose of morphine. But they also were found not guilty. By that time in 2005, Shipman had already killed himself.
Right.
So I think it was just like, we need a little bit more.
We need someone to take the blame. And so many people who have lost their lives and so many families who will never have closure and who lost their family members in such a terrible way
mm-hmm.
that it's like, oh, okay, well, Shipman's just gone now and doesn't have to deal with any of this. And correct. We need somebody else to blame.
Correct.
We need to spread this out and blame more people. And it's not going to bring them back. It's
didn't
not going to fix it. It's not going to bring them back.
The hero in the story for me is Angela Woodruff.
Angela Woodruff. She gets a fucking gold star.
She does.
Right up there.
So that's the story of Harold Shipman.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
Wow, dude.
Well, thank you for sitting with me on the ride of Harold Shipman.
This was a ride, too.
On the short, sweet snippet of Shipman.
Okay.
Thank you for listening. I'm a dweeb. Thank you for listening, everybody. If you want to continue to follow us, you can search for us on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
Search for us on YouTube, Med Crimes Podcast.
You can search for us on Instagram by looking at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/MedCrimesPodcast.
If you want to email us any crazy stories, suggestions, ideas, or if you want to send us any of your little freaky things and be part of Break Room Banter number 3 eventually.
We want to know.
We want to know.
Boom.
You can email us at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Happy Easter and stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.